anxious to step through the gate again, Major?
Yes, I am.
We all are.
Would you like us to bring back anything special?
No, thanks.
Groceries, new outfit, flatware?
No. Just yourselves in one piece, please. Dial it up. You're safe.
Welcome to the Jumping Puddles podcast. Be sure to listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and or YouTube. And follow us at Jumping Puddles Podcast on Tumblr and Instagram, and Jumping Pud Pod on Twitter. And if you want to support our podcast, please check out our Ko-fi. Hi, I'm Sam, and with me are my fellow co-hosts, Tor and Ash.
Hey!
Hi!
When the team finds an ancient warship adrift on the edge of the galaxy, its crew still alive, Colonel Shepard enters their virtual reality stasis to communicate with them. But little do they know, a wraith is hiding among the crew.
Dun, 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 dun.
I feel like ours are mostly bad. I feel so bad for everyone listening.
We tried. All right. What a team episode this episode is. So fun. Where do we begin? I don't even know.
Great. Point. Where do we begin? You know, I will say, it is so refreshing to come in and be like, guys, I love the team episode, because this season has been rough for team episodes. I will not lie, I have been dragging them quite hard to hell and back. I think the reason why is because of this episode, and I think because this episode is just so good, it just puts the other ones to shame. Because I think everything works here. I think the story is amazing, the character little moments are great. It's kind of weirdly like an underrated episode, I feel like, too. There's many iconic like moments and stuff from it. Like in terms of like McShep as well, and just like the team shot, like a lot of like the team stuff is really great too. So Aurora, underrated masterpiece, kind of.
Agreed. I feel like we were kind of just watching the rest of the episodes this season, waiting for Aurora to happen. The anticipation was real. I don't know. I think the opening itself is so strong. Like, let's talk about that Elizabeth Ronan scene right off the bat. So interesting. I love their dynamic.
It's one of my, I don't know, favorite scenes in the show, and for sure one of my favorite Ronan Elizabeth scenes. They don't have a lot, but I like all of them, I feel like, because it's always very funny. Because they are both, I feel like they are both so, such different people, and they try to vibe, but they just don't for some reason, and it's hilarious to watch. Like, this whole scene, I just cried laughing when I was watching it. It's so hilarious how, and cute, how Elizabeth continuously tries to connect with Ronan. And Ronan is just being Ronan. He's not being rude or anything. He doesn't say a lot. So he's just, like, there. Just, like, big silent guy. And it's so funny. Every time that Elizabeth tries to, like, connect, it's just, I think from her perspective, it's not working. And from ours, maybe as well. But I think it's not true. I think there's something, but maybe that's a different discussion.
Yeah, I feel like their dynamic is so interesting to me, because Elizabeth is quite poised and, a confident speaker when she's speaking to everybody, basically. But I find that with Ronan, she's almost awkward in a way she's not awkward with a lot of other people. So it's funny to see her kind of wrong-footed When Ronan's not even trying to wrong foot her, really, he's just being himself. And the fact that she really wants him to stay and is trying really hard to, like, get him to see Atlantis as a place that's interesting and that could benefit him as much as they are benefiting from him being there is just so, it's so cute. There's no other word to describe how cute it is. And then kind of like a weirdly flirtatious power play dynamic between the two of them where when he's leaving the table, he's like, okay, I'm leaving. And she's like, well, I'm leaving too. And they're like, okay. And she's like, okay. Like that kind of, that kind of weird vibe. I don't know. I got that vibe from them. I don't know. Did you guys?
Yes. Yeah. Short answer, yes. I don't know if we've talked as much about it on, like, the podcast as much as off the podcast, and we're just hanging out. We have talked a lot about sort of the potential of Elizabeth and Ronan as a couple, which is something that I think we all sort of came to love as we all talked about it more and more. Like, it wasn't something that was, like, in our minds originally, and then just as we started talking, we were like, wait, this is a really fun and, like, sweet, awkward dynamic here. And I think this opening scene just encompasses it so well. Because it is kind of, well, I guess in our minds, it is kind of flirty. And it is just, like, very, like, awkward, like, meet cute. Like, there's a very, like, nervous tension around Elizabeth. And it's good, like, Ronan makes her kind of nervous. And I wonder, like, what it is about him, right? Is it just, like, because he's such, like, a warrior? Obviously, no. I think it is, like, his lack of talking, I guess, is, like, the word for it. Or, like, just because he's just, like, this imposing, like, tall, kind of silent figure. I think she's, like, I gotta fill the space somehow. And he's just, like, you don't have to do that with me. But she is, like, oh, God. So, I don't know. I think they have a really great small friendship, relationship, whatever you want to call it. And I just love, I wrote down, it's always going to be a good episode when, you know, we start off with a cute little character moment. Because I love just getting this, like, random scene, and then they don't even, like, really interact with the rest of the episode. So it's kind of like a cold open almost, like, where it's just a fun little moment, and they move on to, like, the real plot.
Yes, you're so right. It doesn't really, it kind of sets up, like, towards the end of the episode, it sets up the rest of the episode with Rodney calling Elizabeth and leaving, but it's like, yeah, this is a scene solely for the characters. It has nothing to do with the plot, and I really, really appreciate that. Because, yeah, it gives it just so much, and I completely agree that this scene is kind of flirtatious, or at least Elizabeth is kind of flirting. And yeah, I was wondering, is it because she has a crush? Is that the reason why she's so nervous? Or yeah, is it because she can't really, like, Ronan has been there for a while now, for a few weeks at least, but yeah, he's still. I was thinking maybe she was comparing him to Taylor for being also from, like, from the Pegasus Galaxy, for having fought the Wraith, but coming from a completely different point in his life still, or like he's a completely different character, and yeah, he doesn't talk much. So she, with Taylor, she has this like, in my mind at least, she has this relationship that they work well together, that they have both have this leadership connection, the responsibility, and like communication, and like that's their thing, so they have the connection there. But she can't really I don't know, put her finger on Ronan, I guess, so she can't really, doesn't really know how to approach him, I guess, but still she tries in the best way she can. And yes, the miscommunication, like, where he says, I'm leaving, and she's like, oh, no, no, please stay, we want you here, and all that stuff. I love this shit. Miscommunication, when it's resolved eventually, is like, I eat that shit up. I love it so much. This scene is excellent for me. And yeah, she's so embarrassed when he's just like, yeah, I'm just leaving the table. She's so embarrassed. It's girl, please. Someone help her.
It's so endearing. And you can tell Ronan is a little bit amused by her reaction. So that's also nice to see, too.
Love to see more of Ronan kind of messing with her a little bit, like, for his own enjoyment. I think he would do that. He's kind of got, like, a little mischievous side to him, I think. And I think he would kind of purposely make her awkward around him, and eventually she'd catch on and be like, are you doing that on purpose? And he'd be like, yeah, kind of. just really, really fun little scenarios like that where he would just, you know, make her a bundle of nerves.
I mean, he I does get plenty idea. Of practice on Rodney all the time.
True.
You know, maybe they also did that. I was going to say, watch this transition. No, it's actually not that good. I thought it was good, and then I was like, no, never mind. Well, no, because he doesn't really have much to do in the rest of the episode. So maybe they were like, we'll give him a good opening scene, which I don't mind. He's sort of he gets a good, like, some good Taylor moments. Of course, their friendship is, like, really on display here, and he also gets some funny moments, subtle moments with Rodney. But besides that, unfortunately, him and Taylor are more second players to the mixed chef of it all.
Which is the typical. But yeah, let's talk about Taylor and Ronan in this episode. I thought they were so funny. On the ship in particular, one scene that stood out to me in terms of Ronan is him just, like, picking up the corpse of the ancient with no problem. He, like, doesn't even say anything. He just, like, picks it up and then puts it back down on the floor after to make room. And I'm like, you're just touching, like, a dead body and you just don't even care. Like, just totally unfazed. You had no emotion on his face. Just like, well, this is in the way. And so it's over. He's dead. Make me die.
Yeah. No, he has a lot of really, like, great, like, small moments in the background. That entire scene, Taylor and Ronan just start bullshitting Caldwell for, like, half the episode to, like, delay the time, and they're doing it so well, and, like, Ronan's looking at her to, like, nice, and she's like, I learned, like, I've listened.
That scene is so hilarious, but because you see them, you see the faces they make, you know what's actually going on, that Rodney is doing something he's not supposed to do, according to Caldwell. But they just, the way they cover it up, and they just, yeah, they're bullshitting their asses off there. It's, and they're trying to, like, taking turns, but Taylor does the most part, and just, like, tries to technobubble, and you know she usually doesn't do that, but somehow it works, and Caldwell's like, oh, okay. Then he totally believes her. That's even funnier to me, because, you know, it's just all bullshitting.
Yeah, the fact that he just swallows it so easily when clearly she's just, like, pulling phrases she's heard Rodney say out of her ass in the moment, and Ronan is like, yeah, that. Like, that's what's happening right now. And it's just, like, it's the best. It was, like, the energy between them was so funny. Taylor's facial expressions, like, cringing as she's, like, lying is so good. And also just their energy moving in the space of the ship as well, when they were tasked with counting the pods to see how many ancients were on the ship. And Ronan was totally fucking with Taylor and being like, oh, 28, oh, no, 48, oh, no. Like, so she would lose count. It was just the best. Usually we see that teasing that he does with Rodney, not so much Taylor, but I was glad we saw it with Taylor in this episode.
And it was so casual, too. Like, I feel like you don't notice right away that he's messing with her, but he starts with, like, oh, yeah, I had 28. Oh, no, there were another three. Oh, wait, there were more. And he just keeps going, and they're like, oh, you fucking idiot. Just let her count.
Well, I love when we get, like, goofy Ronan. I think that's a trait. It's very, like, hidden underneath. And I feel like it's low-key just Jason personality coming through. Which, again, I don't hate. I think it's really fun. I kind of like that they made... Well, okay. As in compare... Like, when you compare him to Teal'c, right? Like, oh, gosh. Like, right? Like, Teal'c is sort of, like, the stereotypical, like, the really serious alien, right? That kind of, like, started from Trek and stuff. Mm. And so I'm happy they kind of went a somewhat different route, not really, with Ronan and Taylor, because they are very serious. They are clearly the serious ones. But some of their personalities do, like, their actors' personalities sort of peek through, and I think that's what makes them, like, stand apart from just, like Teal'c copies or whatever. And so I do wish we got more of that, especially from Taylor. I think they do kind of force her to be the very serious one. The Miss Yoga, the I'm Calm one, and I'm like, no, she can be funny. Like, she can be, yeah. I just appreciate when their personalities shine through, and I think their personalities really shone through this episode. Like, because even, yeah, like, when they're messing around or when they're bullshitting, like, their expressions are so on point. And you can just tell they're having so much fun with it.
Yeah, totally. Also... To go back to a scene we talked about before that, when they're just bullshitting to Caldwell about why Rodney's not answering, I love how they don't even hesitate. They just, Caldwell's calling them, and they're like, oh shit, Rodney's not here. And they don't even think about it. They have his back. Another one of those team moments that's so... beautifully done in this episode is that I just, no matter what, they have his back.
Yeah, and I kind of like how this episode is sort of a John as the damsel in distress in disguise episode because of the way the story is framed. Like, he goes in the pod and then they find out that there's a wraith messing with the VR. And then as soon as Caldwell calls them back, it's kind of like the team fighting for Shepard's life against time, Caldwell being an asshole, and the Wraith all at the same time. So it's fun to see them sort of team up in his defense. Like, as soon as they got beamed back onto the Daedalus, Rodney's like, why'd you pull me out? Like, we can't leave him there. Like, give me time to get him out and get him out properly, because there's the whole issue with pulling him out of stasis without him willingly getting himself out first, and how that might affect his brain, and if the Wraith perhaps even booby-trapped the VR system so that if they did something like that, then they would cause more damage to him. Just seeing the team and Rodney in particular come to his defense, like, that was awesome. And I, of course, I love the line where he's like, you know, me and Shepard take turns saving each other's life, and it's my turn. Taylor and Ronan being like, yep, okay, I guess we're doing this. And Taylor giving him the, like, good luck. And Ronnie being like, thumbs up. I thought the rescue mission framing of it was really cute.
Well, I love, first of all, the damsel in distress. I love that it's John first. And I just love, it's so on brand for Rodney. to also get kind of stuck in there a little bit. We're like, Tayla and Ronan now have to rescue both of them.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh my god. Our humans are in trouble. Damn it. Like, let's go get our humans. And I think what this episode does so well, besides everything. Sorry, I'm an Aurora, like, stand first, human second. But what I think this episode does so well, in particular, is balancing sort of, like, the funny slash, like, the more, not really emotional, I would say. Like, emotional, but, like, low-key emotional sort of scenes. Because that scene where Tayla and Ronan have to talk to Caldwell back on the ship, and they're, again, like, trying to, like, you know, get some more time for the boys. It's just so sweet and how, like, so easily they've sort of, like, risen, yeah, to their defense and stuff. And it's hard to believe that, like, this is the same team from season one. They've really come far in sort of establishing them as sort of, like, the perfect team almost. Like, I don't know, they just feel so natural in a way that just, unfortunately, just didn't really work with Ford and Tayla. Which is, you know, it's not the actor's fault. It's just the writing, I think, and then what the writers wanted to do with him. But it's only been, you know, I guess it's been a lot of episodes, but it's only been 9 episodes, right? And they've really done a great job of sort of bringing Ronan into the team and just making all of his dynamics, like, unique and stand out. And I think this episode, it just feels like this has been our team since season one. Like, it doesn't feel like a team that's just formed a few episodes ago. Like, it just feels so seamless. And it, like, even when Ronan's, like, bullshitting and, like, you know, making all these, you know, messing with Tayla and stuff, like, they so quickly jump to the defense of their team members. It's so sweet. It's just them as a team done perfectly. Like, this is what they are.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, and even individually as characters, they're so, like, their very essence, I feel like, is seen in this episode. Like, Rodney is full-on sass completely. The entire episode is just incredible. Right from the beginning, when he first tells them about the warship, and they're like, oh, can we wait for it to come to Atlantis? And he was like, oh yeah, 42 million years. Should we wait on the porch? Like, the sass was incredible. Then when he was sassing Caldwell on the Daedalus, when he was pushing Daedalus crew members out of the way and literally was like, move, move, trying to get to equipment on the ship. just peek. Sass throughout the whole episode, and of course the protectiveness of his team as well was pure Rodney. And the anger at John for kirking when he should be focusing on the mission was also very Rodney and so fun to see. And then Shepard himself in the episode was very Shepard as well. Completely the essence of Shepard. Like, the hard eyes as soon as they talked about the warship. And the flirting outrageously with the Wraith lady, not knowing she was a Wraith. And all of that. It was just so good.
Yeah, you know, you'd be able to perfectly. Each character, I feel like, is really, like, displayed here so well. Obviously, I wish we got more screen time for Tayla and Ronan, but I still think, like, they shine, sort of. Like, it, like, you can see, like, them as characters are just, like, perfect here. But especially the John and Rodney, I think, are just so on point. It is so John. It is so John Shepard to immediately start flirting with a Wraith. And then being thrown in jail multiple times, breaking out and trying to convince the captain, like, to listen to him, and just getting thrown back in jail every time. Like, it's just him. It's just him as a character. The cringe fail swag, if you will.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Oh, question, since we're talking about Shepard in the VR, how do we feel about the Aurora uniforms?
I'm conflicted. So I was going to say, I think the design of the virtual reality is great. Like, I think the design of the ship and sort of like the white, everything, cool. I feel like I don't know if I like the costumes. Is where I get kind of stuck on. I don't know if it's like too much white on white, and like maybe I would just prefer it if they were just, maybe the ship should have been beige and then they could have been dressed in white, or the opposite, vice versa, whatever. But together, I don't know if it works very well, but I feel like separately, I'm like, okay, this is cool. But like sometimes, like when John was in like the white uniform just walking down a white hallway, I was like, girl, I was like, let me turn down my brightness. I was like, he is radiating over here. So it gets like a B minus from me.
I think what was throwing me off sometimes was, like, I know that's the whole thing about this episode, but the blue filter when they were in the virtual reality, like, there's this blue filter, and so everything is kind of blue-ish. And I don't know, I haven't really thought about the uniforms, but I'm looking at pictures right now just to, like, get my memory running. It looks like everything is kind of sterile, I feel like. So a little bit like a hospital, maybe. Also with the white and, like, I guess they have a little bit beige. I don't know. When you asked the question, I was like, do they look a little bit like the Tok'ra? But they don't. But, like, the Tok'ra also have, like, a lot of beige going on.
They do. So,
yeah.
Not a neutral.
Yeah. At least they got rid of the hats. Like,
true. True.
We take the small mercies.
Someone had to say it.
But yeah, I don't really think I have an opinion on the uniforms. But like, I know it's, they did it probably because she's a woman and they had to emphasize that she's a woman. But she, I think the Wraith wore a corset.
Yeah,
I think she looked really cool in like the. But I mean, she just looks good. So can't blame John there.
No.
Yeah, so I thought that was cool, but I think it would have been cool to have like other people also wearing that and not just her. Yeah,
I agree. I kind of liked the blues in the episode because I feel like the Daedalus and then the dead Aurora were like in these like deep indigo, like blue, almost purple color with like the green highlights for the technology, and then it was a nice contrast for me to the VR, which was like the light blue. But I also agree that I don't know, I feel like the uniforms, the men uniform was like kind of just boring to me a little bit. Like, it was kind of very flat and boxy, and like when John like deliberately opened his, like, undid the buttons and was like, yeah, fuck this. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Another very in-character moment. Yeah, but the female technician / Wraith, her outfit was definitely cool. I appreciated the blaster belts as well, and the high boots, that was cool. And everyone should have been wearing that, in my opinion, not just her.
Yeah.
Give us some arm action, just.
Yeah, something.
Yeah.
And I always appreciate, even if I didn't like the costumes that much, a change in wardrobe with our team, because we always get them in their uniform. So it is nice to see like a different outfit every once in a while.
Yeah. Say though, I really wonder if they sort of thought of this episode and then like change their minds. Like, I don't know what happened, because we later see in the end of the season, we see I don't remember what it's called, but there's that other ancient ship in the episode with the volcano.
Oh yes.
That ship looks so fucking different. What do you mean? It looks like the Prometheus. I mean, not like the Prometheus, but you know, it has like a more bluer, redder kind of vibe to it. So I'm just like, what happened there? Did they just change their minds after, or was that always the plan, just to have them look different on the inside?
Huh. Was it the same kind of ship?
I don't remember if it was an Aurora class ship or if it was a different ship.
That could be it. It could have been a different ship. I do remember, though, it has similar, like, it could just be because, like, they just reused the set, maybe. But, like, it has similar, like, set dressing, right? Because it has, like, the chair in the middle and then right. It has, like, the seats on the side.
Yeah.
But it's, like, a completely different color on the inside. Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, for an in-universe explanation, it could just be that they either... Yeah, I can't remember if it's the same ship or a different class, so that might be one explanation. That it's just, like, they had different designs for different ships, and or also different interior designs for different ships. Or maybe it's from a different time, like, maybe it was, like, built 100 years earlier... Because I don't know if we know how long, like, the ancients lived for quite a long time in Pegasus, so maybe they just also changed over time.
Right, we know this ship was built before, a little before, or maybe a lot before, the war with the Wraith. So I don't remember now what the ship Inferno was, but we will find out very soon.
Oh no, I just looked it up, and the ship in Inferno, that's the episode with the volcano, is also an Aurora
class. Ah, it is an Aurora ship. Weird, they look so different.
They do.
Different vibes. Maybe it's like the time travel thing they wanted to make it look like. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that leads into my next thing, where I feel like one thing I do kind of have to criticize, it's less about Atlantis and more just kind of like the whole franchise and how they dealt with it. Mm. I kind of just wish that they had stuck with an aesthetic for the ancients. I feel like they never had one. Because the ancients show up in SG-1 first, right? And then they show up in Atlantis. But then show up in Universe, not like them themselves. But remember, the Destiny is the original ancient ships that they made. And that's, like, completely different from a lot of the ships that we see. So I kind of wish they had stuck with an aesthetic. Because the Wraith have an aesthetic. Like, the Aura have an aesthetic. The Gold have an aesthetic. But I feel like the ancients are all over the place. They can never decide on what they want them to look like, where, act, if they're good or evil. Like, there's just no plan, it seems like, with them.
I feel like that's very ancient.
Yeah.
Because they don't have their shit figured out as well.
No.
But yeah, you're right. It would be nice to have kind of like a recognition factor when you see something and you're like immediately, oh, so that's ancient. I'm kind of like, I know that Universe is later, but it would have been, I'm kind of sad that they only came up for the design for the Destiny, for Universe, and not, like, in Atlantis, because I think it's a very cool design. And it would have been fun to have that in... Again, it's a different class, but, like, maybe, like, the kind of triangle shape, or, but, you know, very, very cool. Would have been cool to have that in Atlantis, maybe, as well. Or to see that as well. But yeah, you're so right. They don't have an aesthetic. And even, like, I think when they started writing the ancients, they had no clue where they were going with that.
Yeah.
Because the first time we meet them, I think it's Oma de Sala, and she's already ascended. So we only see, like, the glowy space jellyfish thing. And then they kind of were like, oh, maybe there's something here. And they just started creating for that. But, yeah.
Right.
Is this the scene?
Yeah. Yeah. And even if, you know, I totally forgive them for like SG-1, like obviously like they were figuring it out. So I get it. But I feel like even Atlantis, like I just wish they had stuck with an aesthetic throughout the show. And maybe they didn't think as far ahead, but like with Universe, maybe you know, used more of that aesthetic in the Destiny. I mean, I get that, again, I get that Destiny's supposed to be like an older ship, right? And so it is like very like metal and it is quite different, but it just blows my mind sometimes. And I remember that like Destiny was made by the same people who made like Atlantis or like these ships. Cause I'm like, huh? Like, did, what? There's my brain, the correlation there is not hitting.
Yeah, it doesn't feel connected. And in the context of the show, I understand like the ancients are really these like unknowable people, and they're such a mystery throughout the series or the franchise as a whole. But like, I feel like as a showrunner or like writing the show, you should kind of know, like you should know the lore behind the ancients, and like you should know their aesthetic and incorporate that in your set design. I think even early on in the first season of Atlantis, they were reusing props and stuff from Gua'uld ships on Atlantis because they just had it around. So they were like, okay, let's put that in there. That doesn't match the ancient aesthetic. Like, that's a completely different thing. So, yeah, I agree. I wish there was a bit more consistency in terms of ancient tech, just like an evolution, at least, in
Oh,
design.
that ties perfect into what I wanted to bring up. It's the gates themselves.
Right.
Because first you have the SG-1 gate, which is like the newest gate. It's like the clunkiest and like
Yeah, it's like.
I love the colors. Like I love the orange and like the gray. I think it looks great. But like then you get Atlantis. And like the Atlantis gate. Hello?
The best.
And then you go to Universe, which is supposed to be the oldest. So it's kind of like they had an evolution in design, but it didn't match the storyline, like the timeline, the in-universe
Yeah.
timeline.
It was like a
Yeah, makes sense.
devolution instead of an evolution.
Yeah. Maybe that's just a human perspective, but like
True. True.
maybe for them the SG-1 gate was like the pinnacle of
I know I miss
design.
our clunky technology of the early aughts, with all these like thin breakable technologies that we have now. So that's fair. One thing that did have consistency though, in this episode, well, two things I guess. I liked the storytelling continuity where, you know, we had the tension sort of between Shepard and McKay still there. So we're getting to see a little bit the breakdown of trust and how that affects them in the field from Trinity. So it's been a couple of episodes since then, but we're finally getting to see, you know, how John feels about it. And the trust is not there anymore, it looks like. Rodney straight up is like, "You don't trust me?" And John's like, "No, I don't actually." So I thought that was super interesting that they carried that over. Because a lot of the times, Stargate episodes are really contained and they don't really, even if a episode kind of ends on a cliffhanger emotionally, it won't really be brought up again or resolved in the future. And so I kind of liked that they continued this idea. And it wasn't just like, oh, he said he's sorry, so it's all fixed. Like, no, it definitely impacts their relationship going forward and continues to do so throughout the season.
Yeah, I was so surprised to see exactly that scene. I was like, ouch.
Yeah, it's
But
harsh.
also, yay! They remembered something. And I like this is like my first time watching Atlantis and like paying attention to Mac Shepp, I guess. it was, yeah, for me it was like a nice moment of like, yeah, story and character or relationship continuity to have that. And I can't remember how it continues throughout the seasons, but I'm my eyes are open to see more of this.
Yeah, and I just think it's such an interesting parallel from the first season, because I feel like we talk a lot about Rodney and redemption, and I feel like in season one, he didn't have to try very hard. Like, he was already kind of a good person right off the bat in season one. And so I kind of forgave the SG-1 crimes pretty readily because I was like, he's a cool dude, whatever. And then this season, I feel like they kind of, in a weirdly subtle way, are doing a sort of redemption arc for Rodney after the Trinity incident. So I feel like in the next couple of episodes, we're going to be seeing him placed in a position where he's kind of responsible or feels like he's responsible for usually Shepard's life. And so he has to redeem himself from that whole Trinity situation. So, yeah, I'm excited to see that going forward.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I feel like this episode definitely helped their strained tension, though. Rodney pulling through in the end and ending up, well, he was, you know, everyone was the hero in the situation, but he did do a lot. So, yeah, he gets the credit for being a hero as well. But he does this, and then, yeah, the next two episodes are very, like, Rodney saves the day kind of thing. So I think maybe I can see John forgiving him after these. Plus, Epiphany's coming. So John can't just be mad at Rodney anymore. He's mad at the whole team for abandoning him at that point.
Yeah.
So I think he's fine with Rodney by then. But I appreciate at least just, like, one little line to continue the continuity of the whole season.
Stargate acknowledging an emotional thread? Shocking.
What?
Never done before.
Groundbreaking.
Oh my God. Whoa.
I also really liked them bringing back the stasis pod lore and incorporating it into this whole new thing where they incorporated it with the VR. Like, I think that was awesome. Like, I thought the stasis pod episode in season one was amazing. Obviously, Before I Sleep is so good, and it's such a sci-fi trope, and so I'm glad they brought it back and like combined it with another sci-fi trope and made it super fun.
And they even remembered that they once found like that there are stasis pods on Atlantis itself, and that they also found like a person there. They didn't mention who, but I like that. They kind of, yeah, they remembered something from even the last season. That's kind of impressive.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I just really appreciate, like, how sci-fi this episode is.
Yeah.
Right? Especially, I feel like with Atlantis sometimes, sometimes it doesn't feel that sci-fi, right? Like, sometimes I feel like the sci-fi element kind of gets lost sometimes, where it kind of just feels like a, because it's more of like an action to adventure type show. Right, so sometimes I feel like the sci-fi element can get lost, like, a lot more than SG-1 and in Universe, because obviously they're in fucking space, so, like, you're always, remember, you're in fucking sci-fi. But I feel like it can kind of get lost, even though we're in, like, a new city, new galaxy, whatever. Sometimes it kind of just doesn't feel that way. Like, we've criticized that before and stuff. But I think this episode does such a good job of just bringing it back, like, full force and sort of bringing it back to, like, such an original concept.
Yeah. And it's going to be used again. Like, they're going to use this stuff in the future. Like, the stasis pods will be a thing talked about later on, which is awesome. I mean, I wish they did something different with them, but there's fic for that, which I will mention in fic corner at the end of the episode.
Oh?
So, also, very random thought that just came to mind. I saw it in my notes just now. Did the Wraith have, like, a Mike Tyson tattoo on his head? Do all Wraith have, like, those weird facial tattoos. Like, where's the lore about that? Like, I want to know more about their whole tribal thing going on.
Yeah, I think a lot of Wraith have tattoos. I'm not sure about the leaders, actually, because I feel like... Or the queens? I know that... I think the guard in the very first episode doesn't have tattoos, like, with the red hair. I think she doesn't have tattoos. But a lot of, like, normal Wraith, like, foot soldiers or whatever, they do have tattoos. And I think it's very cool.
Something to think about.
Yeah. I'm really interested in if there's, like, lore about the facial tattoos.
Yeah. Like, even in the novels, I wonder, because they're more, like, Wraith-focused, right? So I wonder if they ever brought it up.
If any of our listeners knows about this, send us an email or comment. We're very interested.
Yeah. We want to know the lore. Even always. If it's...
All the lore.
Non-canon lore. We still want to know it.
The mystery of the Wraith. We're going to find some way to, like, fix or figure out that tattoo thing for the Wraith. We're going to find some way in our canon. It's going to be something.
It has to be some...
cultural significance?
Yeah. I don't know. My first thought was, like, rank. Which is terrible. But, like, just thinking about, like, how the hives work, I was like, maybe that's what it is.
Maybe it's, like, the second in command or, like, the middle ground? Because the foot soldiers definitely don't, because they wear masks.
Yeah, so... you don't see them.
Huh.
It would be kind of funny if it's, like, non-permanent and have to draw it on every day.
Oh, dear.
You know, maintenance. Some, like makeup.
Yeah.
Especially if it's like a rank thing, but the higher you go, the less tattoos you have, then it would be kind of... Then the non-permanent thing would make sense. But that was just a random thought, and I don't think it's true. I think they are, in fact, permanent. And it would be funny if they, like, every time they're, like, in front of their mirror, like, I have to, like, apply my makeup.
You know those barbecues
go ahead.
In the summer, like, for kids, and they do, like, the face paint? It's like, I'm gonna do a cow today. I'm gonna do a butterfly. Today I'm gonna be Dalmatian. You know, that kind of thing.
That is so funny. You know, I feel like now it's canon that, that's what it is.
Also, I looked it up, and I saw that the Wraith Queen... from, like, the end of season 2 that they, like, conspire with, has a tattoo on her chest,
ooh.
Though. It's, like,
ooh.
This way. Her face is ooh. Not, but, like, yeah. I was like, oh. Okay.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But I think she's the only one.
One more thing. When we were talking about, like, oh, they just... put on makeup every day, like, or repaint their tattoos. I was thinking of, like, the Wraith names that I think we mentioned many episodes ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Michael was there, maybe, or Todd. I don't remember their Wraith names, but it was something like Golden Star, not that, but something not very... Pathfinder? I don't know. Something not Wraith-sounding, to me at least. So I was thinking, I don't know, I was just imagining, like, them kind of trying to, like, match their face, their tattoos to their name.
Oh, yeah, that would be... Right, because I think Todd has the star shape. And then he's, like, the guiding star or whatever, right? Isn't that his name is? Or
yeah, maybe.
Something... So, I mean, that sounds like a My Little Pony name compared to, like, a Wraith name, but, you know.
I think that makes sense. Now we have to, you know, we okay, from now on, we're going to make up names for the people when we see their tattoos.
Yeah, we should.
So what does R write in this episode? What kind of tattoo does he have?
Oh. It was like the Mike Tyson one. Shoot, it's hard to see. Yeah, it's like, it's right on his eye bone.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like a circle.
It looks like a butt lift.
Yeah.
Patrick. A little bit. It doesn't really look like a butt lift, but like it's like a half circle and then a circle inside.
A ninja star.
Oh no.
That was the first thing I thought.
Shuriken.
Did we just find the name for our race?
Ninja star or, I mean, Batleth is pretty funny too.
Right?
Ninja star.
That would be pretty funny though.
I think it would be perfect because we had like guiding star or like stuff like that. So like
Ninja Star, rest in peace. You were a hot ancient.
Yep.
Well, now that we've gone on a very long tangent. You know, we don't get a lot of Elizabeth in this episode. It's just the beginning and sort of the end,
right?
Which is again, once again, kind of unfortunate because where has she been this season? Hello.
True.
Writers, where's Elizabeth's screen time? Whatever. Non-existent. But I guess she has more in this than she has in previous episodes, so I'll take it. But I will say again, just continuing on this whole like team-centric episode trend. I just love how she is so willing to come to the defense of her team. And we get the most iconic team shot.
We do!
It's the team shot. It's the team shot that just defines the Atlantis team, characters, vibes, everything. And not to go on another huge rant, but it does make me quite sad that we didn't get more of that vibe. I think that I really wish they had taken more of an influence from, like, Farscape, kind of, and just made this team a little more outlandish. I think you can, because I think it fits them so well, because you see, like, certain moments where you're like, oh my god, this team is so dysfunctional. Oh, and like, I think it would have been so fun if they kind of leaned into the more wacky side. And I'll give credit to, shout out to my Twitter mutual Rish, because we were talking about it one time, and he was like, oh my god, like, yeah, I wish they made it more like Guardians of the Galaxy-esque.
Yeah.
It fits them really well. Like a group of strange, different individuals coming together to form one unit, and I think that just fits all of Atlantis so well. And I think my only evidence to support this theory is this team shot. But I will cling onto it with my entire life because so good. It's just so fucking good.
Yeah, it's iconic, but the whole build up to it as well. Like Elizabeth talking with Caldwell and they have this walk and talk through the Daedalus, and they're once again trying to, like, have this power play going on, like, whose team is better, in essence. And I love that, as usual. And they're both so protective of their team, which is so valid, and I think it kind of humanizes Caldwell, because he's more connected to his team, and he's protective of them, and he thinks they're doing a great job, which they probably are. But Elizabeth is more connected to her team, and thinks they're doing a great job. So obviously she's more protective of them and thinks that they are better. So I think it's very human that they have this discussion. But once again, Elizabeth comes out on top because they walk onto the bridge and he's like, oh yeah, tell your team to be ready in 1 hour. And she's like, I think they're ready now. And then we get this shot. And it's just like, it's perfect. I think, is that the shot where is John eating something? And Rodney is just like waving, and it's It's fantastic. I think then you get a shot of Elizabeth and Caldwell again, and Elizabeth is just has this really smug smile and like, yes, that's she knows her team and she knows how good they are. So,
yeah, you know, the reason that I love Atlantis so much and it's my favorite of the Stargate franchises is the characters, is the team, and I love them because they are eccentric, and they are, like I always say, the island of misfit toys, nobody wanted, and they all kind of gather in one place, and yeah, I kind of, you're right, I wish they did lean into it a little bit more and made it a little bit more zany, because I think those characters, like you said, and those actors could pull it off, and they could afford to have like stronger personalities and get a little wacky with it, because I love my sci-fi wacky. And, yeah, it just boils down to what we were saying earlier in the episode, how every character's essence distilled perfectly in this episode, in this one shot as well. And for in terms of Elizabeth, we get to see her at her peak, negotiator, girl boss, loving her team, which I can never get enough of. So, yeah, what an excellent way to start the episode and then end the episode on a symmetrical team shot as well with all those interesting little champagne flutes, the ancient champagne flutes. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. I was going to just comment really quick. I was going to say the teenage dirtbag energy.
Yeah.
Atlantis, you know, exude all the time. That's what I want. I want more of that.
Me too.
More of that team shot where they're just the fucking losers that are somehow the number one team in this galaxy.
Exactly.
That's the vibe.
All the burnouts.
Yeah. Like, literally, all the burnouts. All the queer people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
That's this team. That's the energy that all, like, the Fix have.
Yeah.
So we all must have, like, the same idea of what we wanted. And I was also going to go back to what you said right now, which was the last shot.
Mm.
I think, well, I just, first of all, again, I love seeing more team shots. I love all the team shots, especially all the unique ones. We got, you know, the panning of the camera, and then they're all, you know, funny in the beginning, and then we get this really, like, somber one. But I think it works really well. And I think my favorite thing about it, though, is I think it's sort of like an official passing of the torch, right? I feel like this entire time the team has kind of been like, you know, taking, you know, living in Atlantis and sort of being like, okay, like, we're here now. But I like to think that this was sort of them being like, no, we're here now. This is our home now. Like, we kind of got, like, the ancients passed on and they gave us their approval. Not that we needed it, but they were like, yeah, you guys live in the city. You guys, like, take up our fight. And I like to think that, you know, the passing of the torch, the champagne clicking is them settling in and then officially being confident and being like, no, this is our home as well. Not just Atlantis, but the galaxy as a whole.
Oh my God. I'm feeling emotional in this house. Yeah. Yes. I can't say it better than that. Absolutely. Even the way the shot was framed too, like, was so awesome. Like, seeing everybody sitting in Elizabeth's office, and John pouring too was interesting that he was the one to do that. I don't know. It's just, yeah. Nice bookend to this episode. It almost feels like a season starter, to be honest. Yeah. Like a fresh start in a way.
What was I gonna say? Oh, I was gonna not to rain on the parade I just started with this nice little final ending scene. But I will say that I think, yeah, like everything that we, you know, I said, you said, like, it's just such a perfect scene. And I just wish, I wish with all my heart that it was, like, the last time they interacted with the ancients.
Or at least
living ancients. Living in quotation marks. I feel like everything that's gonna happen in that we're gonna have a field day when we get to that episode, which is the season 3 two-parter, The Return. I feel like that undermines everything I just said, and just everything that, like, I don't know, we're gonna get there, but I'll just say it, like, now to, you know, not keep you waiting, but I just don't like that the ancients came back. I think it was a really clumsy excuse. First of all, in canon, excuse is just really, like, clunky, and there was no point. They leave again anyways. They all die. Spoiler alert, they all get massacred in seconds. And I just feel like if this was the last time we saw quote-unquote living ancients, it would have been perfect. Like, we still could have seen them, like, in flashbacks or, like, time travel, or maybe, like, again, they left, like, projections, whatever, like, home movies they made. I don't fucking know. But I think if they should have just stayed dead. Should have just stayed dead.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say that, because I feel like if they stayed dead and this was the last time we saw them as a people, and they were only, like, mentioned by word of mouth or legend or by other people in the Pegasus Galaxy, I feel like their morally grayness, they would be more ambiguous, and we would almost feel a little bit more sympathetic to them. But then once The Return hits, you're like, oh, fuck those people. Like, they suck. There's, like, no questioning how terrible they are after that point. And I kind of like living in this, like, nebulous, they have some good qualities, they have some bad qualities, space. So, yeah.
Again, not to get started on this, because this is going to be, I already can tell, the amount of conversation we're going to have when this harder happens next year or whatever is going to hit so hard. But I think it just makes more sense for them to leave it here, especially when it comes to Elizabeth. Her hero worship of the ancients makes zero sense after that two-parter. And I don't think it's like as prevalent, but I don't know if it was ever a turning point for her. And if she had been like, okay, yeah, now they suck, it would have been fine. But I think they just kind of, like, leave it like, oh, she could hate them, she could. I don't know if they address it head on. While I think if they had kept this ending as the last time we see the ancients, I think it makes sense for some people to still idolize them and some people to, you know, not. Because then you get into the whole thing with Taylor, right? Like, her people feel so betrayed at that point because, yeah, the ancients suck ass and they're finally seeing it. But it's not like they ever stop worshiping the ancients. We don't get that information. They just keep going. And so I think I hate that two-parter, honestly. Not because I don't like the idea of them going back to Earth and being kicked out of their home. That is great, but yeah. I hate when the ancients come back, because I think it just breaks the world in a way that it pains me so deeply, because I think this episode ends it perfectly. Anyways, not to drag the hype train of this episode, we were so like, this is such a good episode, and then I was like, but I don't think it taints it a little bit in my eyes, but I think it's just so perfect. This episode is just so great to me that I still think it's, like, amazing. It's unfortunate that it's just not as amazing or as impactful as it could have been.
If it was more of a mic drop.
Yeah.
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 But maybe that's exactly why this episode kind of flies under the radar of so many people. It's because it's not as impactful. And yes, it's fun to watch, but, like, in the end, it's, like with everything that will happen later, it's an ancient of the week, kind of.
Yeah.
The week. It's goddamn. You got them so good.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's really unfortunate. I wanted to chime in a few times when you were talking, but then you always kept saying what I would say, and good job to you. No,
please. We're on the same brainwave.
Yeah, yeah. One thing I wanted to bring up, I think it's the last thing I have, but One last thing from me is, I'll be mad that it was the Daedalus that kind of,
oh yeah,
in the first place, made all this possible.
I mean,
I'm not making the mood any better right now.
I didn't want to even acknowledge it, but yeah, I mean, yeah. And in my head, I'm like trying to figure out ways they could have worked around it. Like, had a really long jumper ride. That would not work. There's no hyperdrive. So yeah.
I know. I was trying to think of ways right now. I'm like, I was gonna say, I was like, maybe they find the mission report in Atlantis that was like, oh, the Aurora team went out. And then maybe, like, maybe that's established a few episodes ago, and then later they're on just the road, and then they come across the Aurora, and they're like, oh yeah, that's, I don't know.
I mean,
they set this up as the Daedalus being the only option.
Yes, in a way. Like, okay, yeah, they made those rules, so fine, whatever. We'll go by those rules. I guess because, you know, I'll give it a pass because it wasn't the Daedalus coming at the last minute. Like, it was established from the get-go,
right,
as only the Daedalus can get there, which is, like, dumb, whatever. That part I'm kind of mad about. But whatever. But as long as, you know, the Daedalus was there the entire episode, it wasn't just like a, hey guys, like, you guys need help kind of situation. It was like, it was there the entire time. So I'll give it a pass for now, but points off for, I guess points on and off for giving an in-canon reason why the Daedalus has to be the one to take them there.
Yeah, if only Atlantis was capable of, you know, moving through space really quickly. Darn. If only.
Do they have the means for that right now?
No.
That's fair, but I will say, after season 4, it makes no sense why they just aren't fucking hopping and skipping around in the Atlantis.
Why not? I mean, it's always the ZPM, sorry, ZPM's power. Damn, show hypnotizing me to say Z. yeah, but they never have enough power for anything. Like, if they wanted to go through space, they had to have enough power for the hyperdrive, but they also had to have enough power for the shields, and then, because otherwise they die. And so it's like,
yeah.
Come on, I just want the city to fly. Why?
It would be so convenient, too, because they right? just bring everyone with them, and they have all their resources, exactly. Because they moved the whole fucking city.
True.
Oh, but also, like, what the fuck? How does Destiny have all this shit implanted in them, and they can just keep rolling around in that little ship for hundreds of, you know, miles of space? And then Atlantis has to have, like, 20,000 ZPMs that keep depleting. Like,
I mean, the Destiny, first of all, they're not in hyperdrive, they're playing just FTL. Like, I think that requires less energy. And they have the fucking ability to charge in, like, their energy.
Actually, in, like, the why doesn't Atlantis have that?
Oh, don't ask me that. It's just the only game up on the whole universe.
Yeah. Okay, you're right. Yeah. But you know how cool it would have been if, like, Atlantis was just
solar panel,
you know, rechargeable. They could just go to the little sun and just park the base and then just keep flying on, like.
Hell yeah.
Fine, they didn't want to think of that. I'll accept it now that it can't fly around, but past season 4, I'm side-eyeing y'all. They used it once, and they were like, they used it once in season 4, and the finale, and that was it.
Yep.
Wouldn't it be funny if we just stopped with, like, Vegas?
Yes!
We just didn't do the last episode.
Yeah, I would be the last episode doesn't exist. Vegas is the finale.
Yeah.
This is my agenda.
Like happily ever after.
And I'm sticking to it.
Actually, yeah. I'm trying to think of one good thing I like about the finale.
The pause killed me.
There's one McShep scene, and they're not even talking about anything McShep. They're just walking in a hall and talking about stupid plot stuff. They try to kill off Ronan for no reason. And then they make him have... And then they shove him in a heterosexual relationship.
No.
I don't remember any... Like, it's horrible. I don't remember anything about the finale except, like, the last shot.
Because it was... Your brain is trying to protect itself with selective amnesia. Yeah. It doesn't want you to remember.
I don't... Yeah. Like, my memory about... My memory is... In general, is shit, but my memory about season 4 and 5 is just so much shittier because it's been so long since I watched it.
I know, and I never rewatched season 5 either when I do a rewatch. I just watch season 4 and I'm like, okay.
Four is kind of like,
I guess technically I'm in season 4 somewhere.
See, like, my angst-loving ass will, like, watch season 4 and enjoy it, but then season 5 was, like, too much angst for me. I'm like, okay, yeah. No, I'm done.
Reason. It's, like, angsty for no reason, too. Like, anyway, that's another story. They did not need to do all that.
No.
Anyways, I was gonna say, just one of the last few things I have, I love when Stargate does, like, these funny cuts. I feel like it's so Buffy sort of esque, because Buffy's very, like, they've, like, perfected, like, the funny cuts. There's so many of them. So I just love John asking for they can go somewhere private to talk, and then cut to him just being in jail.
Yeah.
I wish Atlantis, I think Stargate, I don't know how many they do, honestly, but I wish they'd done more of those, because I just crack up all the time. This is perfect comedy. Oh, okay. Last thing for me that I have. Officially last thing. Well, two. One thing I was going to say really quick. I just think this is such a great... Again, we've talked about it. Such a great mixed-up episode. There's just so many iconic lines. There's so many tropes in it. The whole saving each other. Rodney teasing John repeatedly about, like, the warships and the armory. It's like a joke in this entire episode where Rodney's just trying to, like, get John excited. And then, of course, Rodney showing up in jail, and then there's that really great aesthetic scene of them talking in the jail. And
like, nice
Rodney
rescue.
Jealous over, yeah. And then Rodney getting jealous over John, flirting with the Wraith. And then, like, there's just so many iconic moments.
Oh, I'm just gonna jump in on the jealousy scene. What made me die, is, like, What was the dialogue exactly? Like, I feel like... Because John told them about the thing, right? So...
Or Rodney's like, so why'd you tell the Wraith? Or, like, why'd you tell her everything?
Yeah.
And John's like, like, what do you mean? And then Rodney's like, the hands over the shoulders, why'd you tell her everything then? And then John's like, I was trying to get her on our side.
Yeah, that part made me die. Because you know... In Rodney's head, he's like, it's because she was hot, wasn't it? It's because she was hot, wasn't it? That's why you that's why you told her. It's just so funny. It's so them. Oh.
In the next scene, he's, like, drooling over her as well. He's like, oh, yeah, she is hot. So it's like, years like, you really were just being jealous because you also think she's hot.
The comedy. Peak.
We haven't talked about this, but it's kind of like, whoa. I think I don't mind how different this episode is, like, tonally. I think it is kind of all over the place, but I guess for me it works. But it is very, like, be funny, like, cute and funny in the beginning, and then, like, again, funny, and then at the end suddenly gets, like, so fucking serious within the span of, like, 5 minutes. But I was gonna bring up John shooting the Wraith. Whoa. Talk about instant, like, change. He's been so silly, gorgeous, funny John, this entire episode, Mr. Kirk himself, Han Solo-esque. And then he comes out of that shielding thing and he just shoots the Wraith like dead in the face. Kind of like very little hesitation. As soon as the Wraith says, like, oh, I'm going to get the Seeker back so we can go to Earth. And he just instantly shoots him. So sobering. And again, it kind of, I guess, leads into like the you know, the ending scene where then they have the champagne toast. But it's so just different from the rest of the episode. But again, it's still John at his core. Like, he can be the funny, bumbling, like, you know, he is also the shoot first, ask questions later, or shoot first, defend Earth and people at all costs kind of guy. So it was kind of, honestly, kind of scary to see him jump back into that persona after he had been so goofy this episode.
Yeah, I love all the sides of John, and getting to see them all in one episode, awesome. Yeah, and I do like it when he's scary. Like, I do like, and I think you're right, it's the switch that's so kind of jarring almost. He lulls you into a false sense of security. Like, you kind of forget what he's capable of. Like, killed 50 people with the Stargate, and then killed, like, another 20 with his bare hands. So, like, you know? Yeah. A lot of layers, our John. He's our little onion.
Say, you know, I was thinking about it, and I was like, you know, since we've hyped up this episode so much, this is, like, the perfect episode, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know what? I feel like this really might be sort of, besides the pilot, which is obviously, you know, we've praised that pilot to hell and back. We also love that freaking episode. I was going to say, I feel like besides the pilot, I think, and like the obvious like finales, like the very like exciting finales, I honestly think this episode would be a great first episode to show someone.
What oh, yeah. That? Yeah, I mean, it's all in there. Like, you have the science fiction tropes. You have the characters on full display, like their very core of them, totally all kinds of sides and facets. Relationships, pretty solid also. Team dynamics, pretty solid also. So yeah, I'd say it's definitely a good intro episode. I agree.
Perfect. Well, let's head over to Ash with the Bechdel test. Oh no.
Oh no.
Yeah, I think you know. I think you know what's coming.
Oh.
Yeah, this episode fails. And again, there are three women, and I don't think they ever interact at all. The only scene where two of them are in the same room, even, I think, is when Elizabeth and is on the bridge of the Daedalus.
There was one thing missing.
Yes.
In this episode, and that was
the women.
A tale of Ethnology. Yeah. Okay. Now it is time for the behind the scenes.
Woohoo!
So, there's some good ones this episode. So, this scene was written by our good friend Brad Wright and Paul Binder. And it's directed by our other good friend, Martin Wood.
Oh! Yes. I see now.
We got some of the good old gang in here.
I see.
okay, so there's some pretty funny ones. So according to the DVD commentary, every scene where Ronan Dax appears in the spacesuit was actually a body double.
What? So
in the beginning, when they're exploring the ship, he's in a body, you know. It's not actually Jason Momoa, because Jason Momoa's dreadlocks would not fit in the suit.
Oh. Oh, no.
No way.
Yeah, and so after I found this out, I rewatched the scenes. And yeah, he, like, they don't, they have him, like, doing voiceover lines, but you just, like, you can't see his face at all in the suit. He's just, like, walking around and stuff. So, yeah.
Wow.
I, when you said that, I thought that maybe he was too tall or something, but his dreads, oh my god.
Oh, yes. Okay, the next one. So, there's a theory going around, right, So that the weakness of the Wraith is never discovered. It gets destroyed and we never find out what it is. But a lot of people theorize that it has something to do with the biological nature of the Wraith ships. Because it's season 5 episode Infection, you know, the Wraith ship gets like in, you know, contracts the Wraith version of cancer basically. And so people say that like it may be like a large enough concentration to It may be a concentration, and maybe it's the most powerful weapon to use against the Wraith because it could disable all of their ships.
Sorry, that was just like a never a sentence I thought I would hear in the English language. That was too good.
Yeah, so I, you know, I'm a believer that I think that's a pretty plausible theory. Yeah.
I'm into the biological ship thing. I think it's cool, and having the weakness be like an illness. That's cool.
Yeah. And it's because it doesn't happen until season 5. So it is kind of cool. Like, towards the end, they finally figured out, like, what the secret was. Eventually, they got it.
Hmm.
Feels very on brand. So in this episode, 2 Wraith cruisers are destroyed. And it's the first time they've destroyed Wraith cruisers.
Oh.
Since the expedition has arrived in the galaxy.
Damn. Congratulations.
This episode also marks the new patches some of the Daedalus crew wear.
Oh.
So they wear a modified version of the SGC Earth symbol patch with the glyph of the constellation of the Pegasus set against the image of Earth.
Cute.
Oh, I love that. It's kind of the bridge between like what they are, the bridge between Pegasus and Earth.
So the two people playing chess at the beginning are actually like real like chess masters. They actually
brought them
in just to add realism to the scene. And when they got there, they actually rearranged the board. They were like, this is not correct. Because they wanted to try to do like a really impossible scenario that would actually have the people there stuck for hours working on this. So it's just really cool. Just a little small detail bit that they did. I think it's really fun.
I love that.
Cool.
One, again, little funny thing is, again, John mentions that there's no place like home, which is a fun little reference to Wizard of Oz. And I just love that they're calling back to SG-1, because SG-1 had so many Wizard of Oz references to the point where the studio actually had to step in and ask them to stop because they were making too many. And so I love that they little snuck that in there in the sequel. A little callback.
The one good thing MGM did. Let them use.
Jump again.
I'm not bitter or angry. No.
I am. You will burn in hell when I catch you. Oh, okay, yeah. So, just some quick little... shout out to the little actors that were the little actors. Shout out to the actors that were in this episode. We have Pascal Hutton, which is the first officer, and she was best known for playing Abby on Sanctuary.
Hey, yeah.
She's also a singer, and Sanctuary has a musical episode, and she's in it.
Ooh, I love musical episodes.
I did not know that. That is so cool. I had no idea. Amanda sings?
Yes.
Oh, maybe we should watch that.
I know, like, yeah. Wait a minute.
God, let's do, like, a bonus episode one day just about that episode.
Let's do it.
Fun.
I'm down.
Down as hell. Okay, so we have Bruce Dawson, who is the captain of Aurora, and he previously played a crewman in the episode, Stargate episode, Forsaken. Cool.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he looked familiar.
And then we also have Ryan W. Smith, who is just an Aurora crewman, and he previously played Sergeant Bradley in the episode Heroes Part 1. So, whoa.
Oh, hey, that was an important episode.
Yeah. And then, of course, we have our resident Wraith expert, Mr. James Lafosnos, icon.
Yes!
That's it. Now I can pass it over to Tor for the fic corner.
All right. So you heard me waxing poetic about those stasis pods and how the episode very cleverly combined the stasis technology with the VR technology to make a really cool setting for the episode. Fic does it too. So, one fic, I'm sure everyone has already read this fic if you have read fan fiction for Stargate Atlantis at all, but I'm still recommending it because classics deserve the love too. It's called Time in a Bottle by the effervescent Astolat, very famous, prolific fic author and real life writer. Time in a Bottle. I don't want to say too much and spoil it because it's kind of a mystery in the story, but let's just say John and Rodney get stuck in a virtual reality, not really remembering how they got there, and trying to figure out a way out or slash just chilling with a mini vacay. It's a great story. It's humorous. It's really heartfelt. Dare I say heartbreaking, but of course, happy ending. All around. Excellent fic. Run, do not walk. Actually, I was going to ask for Fic Corner, because we mentioned a little bit of a lesser-known ship, Elizabeth and Ronan, if there are any of us in the Jumping Puddles crew who know a good Elizabeth Ronan fic that they want to recommend.
I don't have one. I know Sam read one at one point, but I don't know if you want to recommend that one.
Let me see if I saved it. Oh, no. I have to go back and read more. I need to read
that. Hey, we can throw it to our listeners. Listeners, if you are a Ronan Elizabeth shipper or have read a fic and think it was good and you want to let us know about it, let us know about it on our social media.
Yeah, definitely.
Please. Oh my gosh, wait. But I only have, I have one, but it's the one we talked about. It's The Modern Man's Hustle, 11 inches.
Oh, yeah, that one.
This is written in 2009. There's kind of a few things about this fic that I really don't like. Just, like, certain phrases and, beliefs. However, it's when you ignore all that, it's quite hilarious. So I'll put like a star by it. Like, just if you're gonna read this, it was written in 2009. Obviously, times have changed a lot since then, so just FYI. But basically, I'll read out the description. A diplomatic mission has lasting consequences for Elizabeth and Ronan, featuring alien wildlife, fake marriages, and witch hunts. I promise. Yeah, please send us any recommendations if you have any, or if not, I promise I will like dive deep again into this tag and into the ship to find the gems. I do really like this one though, because I did bookmark it. It's just to be warned that there's just some parts that aren't, you know, modern.
We also discussed in this episode the team and how they could have leaned into their eccentricities a bit more. I feel like 11 inches as a fic writer just goes all of the way with all of the characters and leaning into their eccentricities. So if you are interested in a more Farscape-esque Atlantis or a more comedic Atlantis with very outrageous characterization while still being in character, I would recommend 11 Inches work, definitely. Good stuff. But again, warning for humor that may be a bit outdated.
And yeah, I think we can circle back really quick to rankings.
All right.
Which I think this one is pretty easy. Yeah, I have complaints. We talked about it, blah, 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 whatever. I still think at the end of the day, it's a 10 out of 10 for me. Like,
show-stopping.
I love this episode. Yeah, seriously. I love this episode too much to care about my complaints. Obviously, I wish there was more Elizabeth. I wish there was more Taylor Beth. I just wish there was more of the women. I wish there was more Taylor and Ronan in general. 10 out of 10. Amazing. I think this is the gold star team episode. I don't know if there's a better team episode than this one.
Should I go? Okay. Don't hate me. I think for me, so I didn't really know why you love this episode so much, Sam, especially because I know you were really excited about this episode. I was like, why? And after watching it, I'm like, yes, it's a good episode. I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed the teamy goodiness. I enjoyed all the things we talked about, the Taylor and Ronan, the Ronan Elizabeth scene in the beginning, the little bit of Elizabeth that we got. She got two scenes and or three. In all of them, she was amazing. But I think for me, it doesn't have like a huge emotional impact, which is, and I don't know, maybe that's again just my ADD, but I got distracted watching it, especially during the parts in the virtual reality, for some reason, especially like towards the end of the episode. So I think for me, it's more of an 8 out of 10. I still enjoyed it. But I don't think it's one of my favorites.
And I'm going to meet you guys in the middle and say 9 out of 10. Yeah, I like the episode for all the reasons we mentioned during our episode. You know, awesome character moments, awesome team dynamic, fun setting, fun sci-fi trope. Yeah, I suppose there could have been a little more somberness at the end of the episode. Maybe just a little bit more. Just a little bit. But yeah, I can't really... That's me nitpicking. I really can't complain.
Right? Perfect. Really quick little announcement, though, before we say the usual goodbyes. So we've started using Spotify polls recently. So for those of you who don't have Spotify, I'm so sorry. You could DM us or email us your thoughts on, you know, the episode or whatever you want to say, to be honest. But for those who listen on Spotify, you may notice that they have this really cool feature where you can answer polls on episodes you just listened to. So we've recently started to add polls to episodes. So that means that the polls will be up for 2 weeks after the episode drops, and then they'll be closed, and then we'll just get the feedback, and it's just a little fun way to interact. We honestly would love to hear what you guys think. Sometimes the questions will be ridiculous, sometimes the questions will be actually serious and pertaining to the episode, but they might be all over the place. So yeah,
check it like out us.
On Spotify. Yeah. Literally. So yeah, check it out on Spotify if that's something that you would like to do. And then, so we had our first poll up for Instinct, and the question was, were we too harsh on this episode? And the votes were nope, you guys were fine.
Oh, thanks guys.
I know. So,
good to hear.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. Definitely reassuring to know that we were well within our rights to bash it a little bit.
Just a little bit.
be sure to check out all of our social medias linked down in the description box below. We have our professional ones, which is the Jumping Puddles and all that good stuff that I mentioned earlier. And you can also follow our our public Stan accounts as well. I was going to say Twitter's accounts as well, which are also linked down below. So you can find our Instagrams, our Tumblrs, and Twitters all in the description box. So check us out if you want to see and hear what we're up to, Stargate and non-Stargate related. And with that, thanks for hanging out with us today. Bye!
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 All right, you clowns, listen up. I don't often get a chance to say this, so savor it. Good work, boys and girls.
Let's go home.